Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, you listen to The Unknown Show, and this is your host, Bud Smith. Today on the show, we're going to be taking callers. We're talking to Jesse Padley, author of Bodies of Smoke. We're going to talk to Gus Sanchez, Lewis Gordon, and Pat Noon. Unknown Show. It's another night, Tuesday night. Thanks for listening. And first off the bat, we have a caller. 407, you're on the air.
Hey, it's Jay Bradley.
Hey, man, what's up?
Not much.
I forgot to get your phone number for the switchboard, so I saw a random number here, and I was like, look at this.
Yeah.
But, yeah, man. How you doing out there? Where are you calling from?
I am in Castleberry, Florida. It's a little town just outside of Orlando.
Yeah?
Yeah.
What's it like in the town you're at? Is it like swampy? Are you by the beach? What's it like there?
Well, there are a lot of white people who ride motorcycles and carry guns.
Oh. Yeah.
What was that? You cut out.
Oh, I was just asking the question on everyone's mind. Is it like a scary hit meth town? Is that kind of what you mean, like by white guys on motor?
Well, when you go up the main street, 1792, as you're after you pass the. Hang on a second.
Yeah.
That's the border, I guess, so to speak.
Uh-huh.
Because there's a certain delineation as you're going down 1792 that you know that you've arrived in the Castleberry area. Once you pass the only high lie, I think, in Central Florida, and then as you speed up to 1792... You see gun stores, abandoned stores, motorcycle bars.
Yeah.
So that's just generally the impression that you get being in this neighborhood is white people who like to ride motorcycles have guns. And apparently Budweiser is the official beer of Castleberry, which...
Yeah?
Yeah.
Are you a beer guy yourself or no?
I'm more of a mid to high grade whiskey guy myself.
Oh yeah?
Yes.
So man, listen, I'm really glad you called in. I'm glad you made some time to shoot the shit on here. For people who are listening, once again, this is you call yourself Jay Bradley. I have Jesse Bradley, and you wrote a really cool book. It's out from House Fire right now. It's called Bodies of Smoke. How would you describe the book to people who are listening?
Well, if you like Highlander, Greek mythology, and Queen, then you'll love Bodies Made of Smoke.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with that. That's now, I got a question for you. I was perusing the House Fire website, and it's for people who aren't familiar with House Fire. It's like a really cool lit site that does most of their... Seems like they generate their content from, like, they'll give you prompts, and you'll write to a prompts. Were you kind of are you kind of given these prompts, like Highlander Queen, Greek mythology or whatever, or was it just like this is off the top of your head and it's unrelated to the way they do their prompts for poetry and stories and stuff?
Well, for this project, so in 2011, they challenged, they provided a, they opened the challenge up to those who are in sort of the House Fire Writing Group on Facebook to where anyone who was interested could write a 10,000-word novella in 6 weeks, and they had to choose a title from, I think, a bank of six titles. So my choice was Body for Me to Smoke, and so based off of that title, what I came up with, so I always work off of a core idea, and that core idea organically spins out of control. And the core idea in this case was a woman with a Highlander fetish.
And that's then, how she gets off. She gets off from watching Highlander, screwing the Highlander pretty much, right?
Basically, that she's very she's sexually attracted to the Highlander franchise.
Which, for people listening, there's I think there's like more than one movie. There's like how many Highlanders are there? Is there like 15? Or do you know?
I think there's approximately 6 or 7 movies. There was also the Highlander television series that was produced by a European television company. And and I believe there's probably there was also at one point a role playing game. I know someone super nerdy decided to come up with how Highlander would work in the White Wolf World of Darkness setting. So someone actually, and I remember looking at this website in 1995 in the infancy of the internet.
It was the first thing you ever looked up. If I check your cookie history, there it is. The first thing Jesse Bradley ever researched, Highlander, on the internet.
Well, probably not. It's probably porn first. But
this was back in like AOL days, man, when you had those, you get the disc with like you get like nine hours of AOL use or whatever for free, right?
Exactly. So 20 hours for free by using this disc.
Imagine that now. Imagine getting paid for your internet usage now, like charged rather. Be like my yearly salary.
Jesus.
So there's a chick. She's sexually attracted to the Highlander franchise. She gets off on it. And you wrote a book about it, 10,000-word novella. And I recommend that everybody goes and checks that out because it's such a cool, bizarre little read. And when I say bizarre, I don't mean it's like it's definitely engaging, really cool book, and writing is clear. And I want to give you props on that, man. Well done on your writing with that. It was pretty cool.
Thank you.
What's in store for you next? Are you working on a new project, or are you kind of just chilling out, summertime? I can picture you like rolling up to those biker bars and just knocking back some buds, right?
Fuck no, absolutely not. I do not want to get stabbed with a broken beer bottle. So that's why I drink. So I either generally drink alone in my house, or when I'm with my girlfriend, I drink with my girlfriend, either at my house or her house. Sometimes we drink in public, not biker bars. But I tend not to. I have a day job, so I tend not to really go out during the week unless there's something that I have to do.
Yeah. What's your next project going to be? Do you have one on the horizon, or what's up?
Well, I've been working on and off for over a year on this series of stories called Jesus Christ Boy Detective, and it's about Jesus Christ trapped in the body of a boy detective named Timmy Hightower, and he has to solve really fucked up mysteries.
Great. You still there? I lose you.
Oh, can you hear me?
Yeah, sometimes the calls get dropped on here, but I think you're still there.
Okay. Boss, hear me.
Oh, dude, I can hear you loud and clear. So what's your favorite kind of whiskey that you're drinking these days?
What's that?
What's your whiskey of choice these days?
Well, there are three that I rotate from. So the standard is Bushmills.
Okay.
So it's a fine Irish whiskey. Yeah. My girlfriend got me for Valentine's Day, she got me this whiskey, this bourbon from Kentucky called Woodford Reserve. She thought that was the whiskey that I really, really wanted, and it wasn't, but she got me whiskey for Valentine's Day, so I'm not going to be like, bad girlfriend, you got me the wrong whiskey. Fuck no.
Yeah, you're not going to like smash it on the ground and you know, throw a fit like that, you know. You can complain about it on like an internet radio show, but you're not going to like take her out and just berate her about it, yeah.
Absolutely not. And it turned out to be one of my favorites. I've discovered that if you mix Sprite with it, it tastes like a grown-up version of cream soda.
Wow. And what's this shit called again?
Woodford Reserve.
I'm carving that into my arm right now with a dull knife. Woodford Reserve, thank you.
Yeah, it's really fantastic straight bourbon whiskey. Single batch. It's all about the single batch.
Yeah? Oh, yeah.
And the pièce de résistance of my whiskey collection is... And this is the whiskey that I don't drink a whole lot because it's kind of on the pricey side. It's this micro-distilled whiskey from Umatilla, Florida. Umatilla is a really small town outside of Tampa or near Tampa. And the guy who distills it, so it's husband and wife, they distill this on the side. They have a farm, but they are sort of like, well, we grow things and have animals, and we also make whiskey. And it's this whiskey called Palm Ridge Reserve that is probably the best whiskey I have ever had in my life.
No shit.
Yeah. It's about $57 a bottle, so I kind of nurse it.
Oh, yeah. That's like your first drink of the night. That's the good one. You know, you get the, and you hide that one anytime anybody's coming over, right?
Well, I mean, I do share it with my girlfriend. Yeah, which is the only person I have over at my place. But otherwise, yeah, I kind of nerf that shit because it is absolutely just phenomenally delicious.
Fucking right on, man. So that's great. I'm getting married in a couple days, and we're not having very much whiskey at the wedding. It's going to be more like a 20s theme thing going on where it's like you can go and, I don't know, maybe you're going to get shot up by a gangster or something, and there's going to be like vodka gimlets and shit and martinis and stuff and a lot of beer.
Right.
Yeah. So I wish I had talked to you beforehand. I would have made it a whiskey wedding.
I mean, vodka's good too. There's really good vodka.
You know, I'm not a vodka guy, man. My personality disappears. Not that I have a great personality, but I become like exactly what vodka is brewed. You know, it's come from potatoes, and that's what I become. I become a boring potato. My personality disappears.
Well, but. So there is this vodka that's made in Austin, Texas, that's corn-based.
Uh-huh, okay.
It's called Tito's. Tito's. It's been around for six generations. The recipe is passed down from generation to generation, and it's a really smooth, clean vodka. If you're going to go vodka, and it's American. I mean, you know, it actually has been outrates like some of the top shelf stuff like Belvedere and Grey Goose and Kettle One.
Oh, no shit.
Yeah, and it's really, 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 really good. It's an excellent cocktail. A cocktail base, and it's not, you know, I love the potato and all, but it's just that vodka that is so good.
Are you like an Irish guy, kind of? You know, everybody's a mutt, but Bradley, are you like, what's your family kind of, where you guys come from?
Well, my father's side, I believe, were fresh off the boat.
Uh-huh. From where?
Fresh off the boat, Irish.
Awesome.
Yeah, I think he was second generation and I'm third generation. My mom's family is half German and half French Canadian.
Cool.
So that makes me, that means I'm predominantly Irish with a little bit of anger and surrender.
Yeah. Yeah, you sound like you're having a good time down there in Florida despite your surroundings. So what's keeping you? Do you feel like you don't belong in Florida? Are you there? Did you just get uprooted there? What happened? How'd you wind up in this biker bar town?
Okay. My mom and my mom came from New York, actually. She grew up in the Bronx and eventually.
So you're like a New Yorker transplanted down to Florida.
Well, I've lived in Florida for so long. I'm in Florida. I've lived in Florida for 26, 27 years, so by default, I'm Floridian. But, I mean, and I was actually born in Massachusetts because my father, that's where he's from, and that's where my mom went for a short time. And so my mom had me, and then my mom and my dad moved to Orlando, and then my dad did awful things to her, so she had to run away and come back to New Jersey where my grandparents lived. And there's some stuff went on that I had to go through some speech therapy because I had some learning problems. And my mom got remarried, and she didn't want to raise me and eventually my younger brother around New York. So she decided, Florida's way better. And we moved down to Florida, and I lived in the same neighborhood, around the same neighborhood for most of my life up until February of this year when I got a promotion at my job that took me to our more remote office. And it was either, do I learn how to drive in a month? And I don't drive at all. I use public transportation and my bicycle.
Cool.
Or do I just finally move closer to where I'm going to work and do that? And that's how I ended up in Biker Town is.
Well, the thing about moving around and like traveling is like, there's always the good part of the town, and if you're new there, I hope you find the good part of the town, and the reason why it's a good place to live. Cause there's always that positive side to a place,
Well, there's a couple of things that we've just, so there is a, and my girlfriend's like, we need to try this, but the thing is, I tell her, and we talked about this, her and I, is that we can't really eat anything for the day until we go to this Polish restaurant across the street, because Polish food is really fucking heavy.
Yeah.
So there's that across the street. About 2 miles away from my house, there's a brewery that makes really good beer.
Well, there you go.
So there's a couple. Yeah, it's like a really poor, it's like a really, 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 really redneck version of Greenpoint.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Well, that's pretty cool, man. I'm living here in New York City, and my neighborhood's pretty cool. I live way uptown, and we don't have any, there's not. Somebody actually in San Francisco wrote me an email the other day. I forgot to write back. Steve Gowen, if you're listening, he wrote me asking me about New York breweries and microbrews, and I don't know any of that stuff. I drink Sierra Nevada from California mostly, and Brooklyn Lager is mostly what we have here. There's Brooklyn Brewery down in Brooklyn, of course.
Right.
But, so Greenpoint a New York beer too?
What's that?
Where's Greenpoint a New York beer? Where's that shit from?
No. I'm talking about the neighborhood. That my neighborhood is kind of a redneck. There's parts of it that just are, you know, have little cool stuff in it. Like,
oh, but, no, I understand. But you said it's a your neighborhood is a ghetto version of Greenpoint. Okay.
Yeah, it's like a redneck, kind of a redneck version of Greenpoint.
Oh, well, that sounds pretty badass then. I'm sold. I'm gonna come visit.
So, what do you do?
What do? I work heavy construction in New Jersey. I'm a boilermaker and mostly do welding and working with big cranes and stuff. I build like oil refineries and power plants and that kind of stuff. So that's what I do for work.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's that kind of stuff, you know. But so I want to thank you for coming on the show, man. I'm starting to get the other callers piling up, and it was really cool talking to you about your book, Bodies of Smoke. And I hope how can people pick that up? I saw it's on Amazon. Is there a better way for people to check out your book? Do you have like a website where you sell it through or anything, or is it pretty much just Amazon's the best way to go?
Well, so there's a couple avenues. Amazon right now, I believe they're out of stock, and they're which my publisher's like they should never be out of stock, so he's kind of working that out. You can also go through Powell.com to order copies online. You can also order them directly through me. So generally what I do when people order things from me directly that I will generally send you something extra. So it's either I'll write a poem just for you, or I will send you one of my old chapbooks from like 2002. As a little thank you for ordering my book. So you can always go to iHeartFailure.net and find my contact information if you're interested. I generally charge $10, but $8 plus shipping, and you get a little something extra by buying it through me.
That's awesome. Hey, listen, I love the fucking name of your website, man. I couldn't recall off the top of my head, but I remember seeing that. iHeartFailure, that's awesome. That's such a cool website name. And do me a favor, set aside a book for me. I'll be contacting you. You sent it to me digitally, but I want to put it on my shelf because it was a good read. And I recommend anybody else who's in the mood for a really good book, great writing, pick up Bodies of Smoke through Jesse Bradley at his website, iHeartFailure.com. iHeartFailure.net.
Yeah.
And, hey, man, thanks a lot for talking to me, and I hope everything goes good for you out there, okay?
Thanks, man.
All right, keep in touch. Later.
All right, man.
All right, that was Jesse Bradley, and then next on the show, I have a, I had a guy on the line here, his name's Gus Sanchez. Gus, you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you loud and clear. I just heard the entire conversation you just had with Jesse. Was that his name?
You heard the whole thing.
Jesse? Okay.
Are you at you're like a drive-thru or something? You're like a Burger King drive-thru or something? What was that?
I'm at home.
You're at home.
I have a headset on, So
you'll be just swiveling around your office, spinning, and doing all
I'm being the master of the universe right now, you know, talking to you and contemplating the destruction of mass entities everywhere. So we're good.
That's awesome, man. Hey, I'm glad. I'm glad to talk to you too today.
Thanks.
It's Tuesday, and usually I spend my Tuesdays. Talking to people, which is good, because all the other days of the week I don't talk to anyone. I just sit in the same room and I'm very quiet.
Not even your wife? Or your soon-to-be wife?
Dude, my wife is down the hallway. She's on the phone right now with probably her sister, and she is laughing so fucking loud it's shaking the whole apartment, which is great, because there's no better sound than a pretty girl laughing, but I mean... she's entertained. It's all good, man. She came home with some beer, and I'm here in my office. She's out there laughing at something. So I want to talk to you today about, you just put out a book, actually, also.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Recently. What's the name of your book?
It's called Out Where the Buses Don't Run. Subtitled 7 years of rants, raves, dirty jokes, and bad ideas from a small but loud corner of the blogosphere.
Cool.
Yeah.
And it's all just like, what's the deal with your book? It's like segments of it is what it sounds like. It's segments of your blog.
It's about seven years worth of blogs that I've written throughout a lot of different platforms that I've blogged. The majority of those blogs I wrote when I was blogging at MySpace back in the day. So under the nom de plume Dobby71. So the majority of the blogs that you'll see in that book were published there. Some of the other blogs that appeared either on Blogger or Open Salon or on WordPress, where I'm currently blogging. So I kind of got the idea of just putting together kind of a greatest hits collection, maniacal as it sounded, you know, just to kind of throw it out there, just to, you know, I've seen some other people kind of do that with their own work. I remember Aaron Dietz did that a while ago with some of his blogs, and I thought, well, that sounds like kind of a good idea, just to kind of, you know, put your name out there and kind of, you know, showcase your own blogging talent, you know, because to me it seems like the very definition of what a blog once was and what a blog has now become has dramatically changed over the past decade. Whereas, you know, I think when I first started the blog, it all seemed, you know, very, you know, dear diary, you know, today I bought a blah, 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 you know, and whereas now it's, you know, really, it's become sort of a statement of purpose from every blogger, so to speak. So I thought, hey, you know, if everybody else is doing it, why not me?
Yeah, I mean, like exactly what you're saying. Like, probably my first experience with reading blogs is where most people kind of had that experience was MySpace, when everything was kind of like, you know, it was like. It was cool because I guess it was very much like, I don't know, what was like a trend. At the time, it was like a trend. Whereas, like, whatever the trend is now, it's not that everybody's writing. But it seemed like in 2002, I mean, like, my grandma had a blog. You know what I mean? Like, everyone who never wrote well was writing. So it was like, you know, hey, you have to have a blog. Do you have a blog? What's your blog called? And then back then, too, it was like everybody had a had a handle. Like you said, your handle was Dobby71. So there was like, there's a different side of it where, you know, maybe you're not so much writing, even if it is personal stuff, you're not really accountable so much. Whereas now, everything's, you know, you could say, everybody can say what they want about Facebook, but it kind of sucked the anonymity out of the internet where people aren't really going by handles as much anymore. So
right,
now
you're
writing under your real name. And,
I ditched the pen name. Right. And I think to kind of take one step further, the one thing that, you know, back in those MySpace days and what encouraged me to continue writing was, you know, it was okay to write about personal things, but it was also okay to write about whatever you wanted to write about. It was okay to write about, you know, whatever random crap that came to mind. It was okay to write about, you know, whatever silly crap that came to mind. And a lot of the blogs that I used to write were really just silly. So it was perfectly fine to do that because suddenly there was an audience. There were people who wanted to read your stuff, or as opposed to, you know, you wrote it for yourself and it's no big deal. But now you're kind of tailoring it to, okay, I know that now I've got an audience. I know that there's people that if I write this sentence a certain way, if I kind of gently mock this particular person or this particular group of people or, you know, this sort of subset who listen to emo music or wear black or, you know, hipsters or whatnot, I can get a reaction out of people. So that's where I started to realize, hey, you know, this blogging thing is really a lot more than just, you know, the personal business. It's a lot more than that.
Yeah, and the other thing, too, is, like, I mean, used to be, you know, you put something on MySpace, it was like, you know, you see how many people are viewing your blog and the comments. There was a whole comment community. Your friends would actively comment on everything, and you'd comment on their stuff. It was totally just more geared towards that, whereas Facebook, not so much. It was they never put that into their whole gig.
No,
so
they never did integrate it, which I thought was stupid on their part.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they were doing
but
more,
the
like,
one thing
more
that
like game stuff, whatever.
Yeah, whatever. But the one thing that I do like about where I'm blogging now on WordPress is that I'm getting random strangers commenting.
Yeah.
Which is, to me, is even more satisfying now. I'm reaching out to people that I would have never reached out to before. I seem to be striking a chord with some people in terms of the stuff that I'm writing about now, which is more geared towards, you know, the steps that I'm taking to becoming more of a writer, and, you know, taking my writing more seriously and writing about the writing process. And so, you know, I'm getting a lot more feedback from other writers and other wannabe writers and people in that same community. So it's very encouraging for me to continue with that trend.
And you feed off the encouragement of it. You don't feel like so much as like sometimes, I'm not accusing you of this, but sometimes when I read people's blogs or websites and it's about like being an aspiring, you know, this, I want to be an aspiring writer, and it's like, yeah, all you got to do is write. You know, it's like saying I want to be an aspiring photographer. It's like, have you ever seen, you know, if you see a camera, if you pick it up, okay, you're a photographer. There you go. Take it, you know. But there's, you know what I mean? There's like, there's no way to fail at it if you just do it.
I'm not.
By no means am I leveling this on you. I'm just saying.
No.
The encouragement of it, though, is definitely, it's pretty badass, you know, just people, you know, of the same, like, just inspiring each other in a way, and that never gets old. You know, that will never get old.
Yeah. No, I know what you're saying, because I call that whole, hey, if you want to write, just write. I call that the Writer's Digest mentality. You know, if you've ever read Writer's Digest mentality, it's just chock full of completely, you know, well-intentioned, but at the end of the day, very meaningless advice. You know, like, hey, start a blog. Join a writer's group. It's like, yeah, no shit, Sherlock. We already know this stuff. Give me some more useful information that I could take home. Like, how do I write the perfect sentence? You know, what's the, you know, why should I not use adverbs? You know, why are adverbs the enemy? You know, that kind of
why
thing.
Why are adverbs the enemy?
Yeah, I don't give a shit. Sometimes I like adverbs.
Don't use too many ly words. Is pretty much like don't. Overly describe
probably,
shit. Like let people decide for themselves a little bit about stuff.
I don't know. Sort of. Yeah. I think, you know. But you know, to me, to kind of take that one step further, you have to understand the rules, and you have to kind of recognize that the rules are there, but you also sometimes have to be willing to break them.
Fuck yeah, right on, man.
Yeah, and it's like, okay, you know what? If Stephen King said, you know, the road to hell is paved with adverbs, I'm like, okay, then fine. I respect everything you said, Stephen King, and you know what? I'm going to write a book full of adverbs.
yeah.
Just to be a dick.
He's such a strange writer, and like, whereas like, he probably has like, Jesus, at this point, like 50 books, you know? And there's definitely good ones in there though.
Yeah.
People who blindly knock him, you know.
Yeah. I mean, here's the thing. I mean, I am not a big fan of his work. I mean, I respect the hell out of him, you know, because of his commitment to the craft and to me, On Writing, his memoir. I think you've probably read it too, and I think every writer's read it. You know, to me, it's the best book that's ever been written on. The actual craft of writing. To me, it's the perfect book because it writes about, it's not just about here's how you write. It's more about the psychology behind the process. The terror you feel, you know, once you've finished writing a book. It's you know process behind everything. And that's, you know, that's everything you feel. And he captures that perfectly. He captures, you know, the existentialism of the whole process to a T. And that's what I respect the hell out of him about. His writing,
yeah,
it's great. You know, is he perfect? No. I mean, you know, he's like a good, he's like a good cheeseburger.
Yeah, exactly. So back to that, man, you talked about, like, the fear of, like, writing a book. I know you finished second, I think you were through a second draft of the novel recently, right?
I'm in third draft now.
Third draft, yeah.
What's your book
called? Does it have a title yet, and what's it about?
It's still a working title. I'm absolutely dreadful when it comes to titles, but...
Sure.
It's about a superhero who's in a midlife crisis, and his arch nemesis is sort of feeling the pain of not having him around anymore. So they're kind of both leading these parallel lives where they come to this realization there where they kind of need each other. So in a way where they were bonded together as enemies, now they somehow... They've kind of bonded together sort of as very uneasy friends.
Yeah.
In sort of this midlife crisis that they're sort of feeling with one another. And so throughout the book, you're kind of dealing with these themes of, you know, what it is to be, you know, above normal than human. The expectation of being heroic, the expectation of being villainous, you know, and the relationship between good and evil, and how, and what I was also most interested in is how the relationship between the hero and the villain in the book they're both very similar, except that they both kind of chose a different path early in their lives. And without giving too much of away, what the reader will find out throughout the book is that a lot of their relationship takes place very early on in their lives. So really their relationship is an antagonistic relationship that begins at a very young age. So sort of think of it like, the hero and the villain in kindergarten, so to speak. But and then as the story progresses, there is a seismic event that takes place that kind of forces the two of them to sort of join forces, so to speak. And then they both have to kind of make a decision about, you know, where do we continue? Do we continue being who we are as both hero and villain, or you know, do we decide to just live normally? So. That's kind of where the story evolved after I wrote the second draft.
The way you just laid it out to me, it sounds like as big as the John Steinbeck book, you know, like biblical kind of in a way, like East of Eden or something like that, you know?
Well, I kind of described it to a friend of mine as imagine Philip Roth having written The Dark Knight.
Yeah?
Yeah, something like that. So very, very sort of... you know, very existentialist, but also, you know, with a ton of sarcasm and lots of kvetching, you know, lots of gallows humor, lots of psychiatry.
Well, that sounds really cool, man. I wish you luck with your book, and hopefully we'll get to swap. I got a manuscript kicking around, a third draft myself. We'll swap.
Cool.
Like we threatened, you know. But once again, for everybody listening, man, your collected book of blogs that's out now is called Out Where the Buses Don't Run.
Correct.
And it's best bought through Amazon.
Right now it's available on Amazon. And if I can be so brave as to plug it a little bit further, right now... it's available at a 15% discount if anyone is so inclined. If you want to use the code L as in Frank, I'm sorry, L as in Fellow, L as in Larry, F as in Frank, the number 8, V as in Victor, S as in Frank, P as in Paul, the number 9 and A is an apple, you get a 15% discount when you buy the book. So, and yes, it's available through Amazon, and it's also available through Smashwords right now as well. So I'm also working on getting it available. I'm sorry?
You said you did it everywhere. Good for you, man.
Yeah, and I'm also trying to get it through Kindle Direct Publishing. So that way it's available through most everybody's Kindle device thingies, whatever. So trying to get the word out there.
Cool, man. Well, it was great talking to you, and good luck with
yeah,
your book, and keep writing, you know?
Yeah, and hey, and good luck to you and your impending nuptials.
Yeah, Saturday. Saturday's a big day.
Hey.
Okay, actually, really
wow,
looking forward to
wow.
it. Something must
That's
be wrong
cool.
with me.
That's
I'm looking forward to getting married. I must be fucking, I must be insane. I think I hear the ambulance outside my window right now. It's when it takes me away, you know?
Well, take a bracing shot of something on that day, and good luck to you and Rick.
Cool, man. I'll talk to you later, Gus. Thanks again for calling. We'll have to do it again soon, okay?
All right. We'll talk soon, bud. Thanks.
All right.
Thanks for having me. Bye.
All right. That's Gus Sanchez for everybody listening. And next on the show, Willis Gordon. Willis, are you there?
That's right. I'm here.
Yo, what's up, man? How you doing?
Hey, man. I'm all right. I just found it funny. I was just laughing really hard because when Gus said the name of his blog, I realized that's an episode of Miami Vice, Out Where the Buses.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's crazy that you it's not too crazy, but that you realize that because, it's an episode of Miami Vice, right? Isn't that funny as shit?
Yeah. That's a pretty good one, bro.
Yeah, he's a really cool dude, man. I've known him for a long time. He sounds very buttoned down on the phone, you know, but he's a fun guy, man. He's down there. Gus, can you hear me? I think he lives down in like South Carolina or some shit. So if you're in South Carolina, just ask around on the street for Gus, and they'll point him out, and you can party with him. So where are you calling from, Willis?
I'm calling from Canton, Ohio, at the moment.
Yeah. Oh, shit, that's great, man. I talked to a few people from Ohio last week, and I'm always eager to talk to people from Ohio because it's one of those states where everybody seems to be, but I don't know, what's there to do in Ohio? What do you do for fun in Ohio?
Other than for fun, well, we've got actually a couple of things. There's a lot of things from Ohio, and a lot of people don't appreciate it. It's one of those things that you don't appreciate until you move out.
Fuck yeah, I understand that, yeah.
It's one of those things is when I went off to the Navy, I realized, oh, Jesus Christ, there's so much from Ohio because you got Cedar Point up in Sandusky, America's Rock and Roller Coast, the best theme park in the world. People from all over can see that place. Canton, Ohio has the Pro Football Hall of Fame. We got Columbus, which is, I guess, was named one of the most intellectual cities in the country, or the most intellectual city in the country, although I have no idea how the hell you quantify that.
Yeah, right?
Ohio University, I think, is one of the number one party schools in the nation, so Athens, Ohio is pretty fun. Cleveland's always nice. It's always fun to have up there, the birthplace of rock and roll, the first rock and roll concert came from. Rock and Roll Hall of Fame is up there. In Cleveland Indians baseball. A lot of fun stuff going on in Ohio.
Cool shit, man. And I noticed I was clicking around on Facebook, and I know you from your writing, and all of a sudden I see all these photos of Willis Gordon rocking out on guitar and stuff. I guess you play music too.
Yeah, I've got a couple of different things. Yeah, I play guitar, bass, harmonica, and I sing and I do all that other stuff. So I do music.
That's cool, man.
Yeah. I do the music, I do writing, and then I do the fiction and the journalism side, and then some of the essays, and then I've got some electrical engineering that I do and stuff like that. So I'm just kind of.
That's great, man. It sounds like you're keeping busy, which is good because I'm just tired of seeing people just laying there dead. You know, just get up and look alive a little bit.
Absolutely, I think that's one of the things that people are like, you know. And people ask me, oh, why are you even writing about this stuff? And you're always busy. You're always so busy. I said, if I don't stay busy, I'm going to end up in fucking jail. I used to laugh when people, when I was a kid and people say, oh, idle hands are the devil's plaything. And I realized, oh, shit. You know,
it's true, right?
At least when you're when you're manic and everything, there's a difference between being lazy and, like, having to occupy yourself so you don't, you know, go nuts and start a fight.
Do you feel the other side of that? Are you the kind of person who feels like you're way up and then you're way down? And I only mention that because you call yourself manic. Do you feel that way at all, or you're just pretty much all the time?
I have periods of extreme boredom. I have these things where I have to work, and the boredom thing, it has to do with, and I mean, if you guys read my second book, which is available on Amazon.com,
What's it called? What's your second book called?
The Boulevards, which is available online in all your fine book retailers.
Fuck yeah.
It deals with addiction, and deals with loss and these things that I have personally gone through. And when you deal with addiction, and, you know, it's my whole thing is I stay occupied, one, because I like this, I enjoy the stimulation, and two, so I don't get stimulation from drugs. I explained it best to someone just recently, because I went and I covered the Boston bombing, the memorial there, and I also did a fairly decent piece called Fire on the Mountain, which was about Chris Dorner and the handling of that case, which was the former LAPD police officer who went on the killing spree in California.
Yeah.
When that happened, it had been so long since I'd had an interesting case to write about that I was just wasting away, like, on the floor in my apartment with the lights off.
Please, something happened, anything.
Exactly. It's almost like when Conan Doyle described Sherlock Holmes, who's my favorite literary character because we have so much in common.
Yeah.
It's a guy who is an addict. He has to deal with that on a daily basis. And the fact is he takes these challenges to write, and he's or for him to take these cases. And it's like, okay, well, give me something interesting. Give me something that's going to get me out of the house.
And
something that when you do have those low lows, because I don't want to, and I don't know if you're the same way, but I don't want to put something on the page that isn't going to wow me later.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm like that. I mean, I'm not afraid of my own stupidity and stuff. I'll try to do my best, but I'm definitely not concerned with every one of my ideas being fantastic, because I think there's a lot of cool shit that happens with the dumb idea, you know, like this just stupid fucking something that's not overthought. They're kind of like the punk rock side of it. So, yeah, maybe we're a little different, but I totally respect, like you're saying, like the, as you say, the Sherlock Holmes side of it,
It's an interesting concept, because the thing I deal with is that, you know, a lot of guys, and like the guy before me was talking about listening to writers give advice, and a lot of writers say that you have to write every day.
Yeah.
I don't necessarily agree with that, because there are some days when it's not coming. And for me, if it's not, you can't force it, because when you force it, you get shit. And then you got to rewrite, and you got to do this, that, and the other. For me, I feel like when it comes, it comes. There's an antenna. You're connected to, you know, everybody who's creative, I think, is connected to their own, you know, you got the antenna up, as Keith Richards would say. You know, you've got
I agree with you. Holy, that happens, man. What a feeling, right?
You got to be able to receive it. And I think that's pretty cool. It's like, you can't force it out. You know, I've never woken up, you know, all right, I'm up, I'm going to crank out 100 sit-ups, go on a run, have a grapefruit, and write 1,000 words. You know, this is
what
it is. Yeah. You know, I can't sit down and say, okay, I'm going to write now. You know, working on this novel, which is going to come out, I believe, next year. The novel's called Wasted.
Wasted, okay. Autobiographical? Semi-autobiographical?
I tend not to say it's autobiographical, although most of my work is this sort of Ramona Clef-esque work. But I hit the turning point in this novel in one of the most random ways I possibly could have. It couldn't have come from just sitting down and trying to work it out. You can take notes that way, but I don't feel like you write good prose that way. Good prose comes from, if you can, in order to really write, you have to be able to really talk.
Yeah. Yeah,
and,
I agree.
And is that is, and the thing is, people think take that as, oh well, shit, that's easy. I can talk, so I can write. It's not true. It's a very rare person who can really talk. that's the issue.
Yeah.
Is that somebody really talks? So I'm sitting here. I just had the Jack. I just had like a Jack Nicholson marathon. I've been watching all these movies. And I was in the shower, and you know, just sitting around. And I'm thinking, and all of a sudden, I start throwing out Jack's voice, and I just start talking in Nicholson's voice. And then all of a sudden, I'm in the middle of a monologue that he's never said. It's something that I'm writing at that moment. So I can't, I don't have paper, I can't go to my tape recorder, I'm like, oh, fucking hell. So I got to jump out the shower, dry my hands off, and write it down. And in that moment, when I went back and revised it, though, when I went back and, you know, chopped down all the kind of repetitious shit that you get when you're spitballing, I cleaned it up. And it was one of the most, it's one of the most gorgeous things I've ever written. And I said, well, shit, there it is. You know, it doesn't, it just comes to you, I guess, sometimes. And at least that's how it works for me, is that there's these bursts of creativity that you can't really stop. And I think that that's something that people have to relax and let the art come out of them, let that flow through you. And I think that people kind of, they want to force it, you know what I mean? Because there's all these goddamn self-help books and all this other shit, and we really got to get a handle on that shit, because it's not self-help if you've got to read it in a book.
And that's true, man. That is so true. So, again, what's you have a book of short stories that you're plugging earlier? Is that what that was? Your second book of short stories?
My second book of short stories is called The Empty Boulevards.
Boulevard, okay.
Yes, it's a collection of 10 short stories.
Okay.
And the whole deal has been, it's been going pretty well so far, and
cool.
People have been, and the great thing about it is it's just got the whole thing, the back, the writing on the synopsis, the write up that they gave me was one of the best things I've ever read in my life. I can read it to you if you want.
Yeah, sure. Read the synopsis so people can hear what your book's about. Please.
Absolutely. Coming from the back to heroin, heartbreak, and hard liquor. These are just a few things. These are just a few elements at play in Willis Gordon's second collection, The Empty Boulevards. Told in beautifully compact style, Gordon tells the stories of men and women on the fringes of society, raising the issues of the modern serviceman's struggle, death, addiction, manhood, fathers and sons, sex, and lost love. He brilliantly weaves a true journey into the dark heart of America's overlooked and unlucky. His tough and meaningful prose cuts deep into the matters at hand, reminiscent of postmodern classics with a more ragged and worldly flair. With a unique style and a keen eye for description, The Empty Boulevard is an enthralling account of our modern society and the high cost of low living. In this radiant sophomore effort, Gordon proves he is truly a voice for our time.
Well, that's a hell of a synopsis, man. I hope people, you know, if they're looking for some great short stories, I hope they check out your book. The Empty Boulevards by Willis Gordon, and I'm sure you'll have a bunch of other great stuff coming out. Judging by the amount of energy you have, holy fuck, man! It's good for you, man. It's a pleasure talking to you tonight, man. I hope you have a great rest of your evening and shit. You know,
will do. And tell people to go and check out unlikelystories.org, where I'm the new political editor, and have some new stuff up, and drunkenabsurdity.com.
That's great, man. Willis, thanks for calling in. I really appreciate it. And I'll catch you around, okay?
Okay.
All right, rock on, dude. All right, that was Willis Gordon right there. I got a caller on the switchboard here, 720. You on the air. Who am I talking to?
Oh, hey, this is Dustin.
Dustin Harlan, what's up, dude?
Hey, not much. What about you?
Well, I'm just hanging out, doing this show. And I have another caller on the switchboard, which I think might be a friend of ours. So I'm going to bring him live. I think it might be Frankie. I'm not sure.
Yeah,
hey, is that you, Frankie?
Hola.
So everybody listening on the radio is, right now we got Frankie Metro calling from the Route 66 Hostel in Albuquerque, New Mexico. And Dustin Holland calling from, Dustin, where are you calling from? What town do you live in, man?
Longmont, Colorado.
Yeah. Mog Bar.
There you go.
Okay. Yeah.
What are you guys doing this fine evening?
Talking to you.
Yeah, exactly.
That's cool. Just evening.
I didn't even know that was Willis Gordon, the political editor over at Unlikely Stories. Right.
Yes, Willis has got a lot of fucking energy and he's got a lot of shit to say. Very intelligent fellow there, man. He's right in there with you at Unlikely Stories. Frankie, you're still doing music reviews, book reviews at Unlikely?
I've got an essay coming pretty soon, hopefully, if Jonathan Pinton doesn't say that it sucks dick, but I've got an essay coming up pretty soon about Aaron Dixon and the Black Panther Party, and it's going to be a good one, I think. I don't know.
I saw you writing something about the Black Panther Party the other day on Facebook, and I was curious if that was going to be an essay, because it seemed like, so there my question is answered live in person here. That's great.
Yeah.
Looking forward to that.
Yeah. I don't know, man. I'm looking forward to be honest with you. I mean, fuck, even though I can't be there, and Dustin, you get to be there. Yeah, that's awesome, man. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. You want to tell everybody what's going on this weekend, or?
Yeah, I think it's Friday, right? The 3rd is the tour kickoff for La Mariposa, and I think also Hunter Dragon.
Yeah.
But, yeah, through Tiny Amp Records, and then Mr. William Seward Bonney is going to have, at the same time, his release party for Galaxy vs. Sabretooth, which is out now through Cleftjaw Press, which is actually, as the two of you well know, an endeavor put on by the three of us. And
sure.
So that'll be cool. Hopefully there will be copies of Galaxy vs. Sabretooth there. But I'm not sure that any of them have arrived for either of us, so that could be.
I saw it was on the way the other day. I saw there was a shipment on the way. I'm not sure, so it should be.
Yeah, they show up pretty quick.
Yeah.
You guys are talking about a book of poems by William Seward Bonney, and I've seen the book, and it's phenomenal. It's a really, 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 really great. Great collection of poetry, some awesome art in it. The cover itself is fucking just sick. The cover is a saber-tooth tiger? Is that what the tiger lion?
It's like a saber-tooth tiger, but it's like it's shooting like fucking bionic rays out of its eyes, and it's like it makes this sort of, I don't know, I don't guess you would call it like a Sierpinski gasket, because it obviously wasn't like a series of triangles, but there's like one like perpendicular triangle it's like shooting at, like over top of a glacier. It's pretty dope, man.
Yeah, it definitely is.
I love the poems in the book, and you know, the great thing about the book is we're going to be releasing that on Kindle pretty soon for like, I think around $1 is what we're thinking
about. I guess I'll ask you now, does $1 still sound good? Because I was going to do that tonight, probably after I got off the phone with you guys.
Righteous. $1 it is. $1 on Kindle. And, you know, there are, you know, but there are, you know, people out there that say, like, you know, e-readers, like, kill the small press industry and print and all this stuff. And, yeah, I agree with that. But it also saves trees, man. It also...
Well, I tell you what, I don't agree that e-readers kill the readers out there, because... I get I don't get emails from people who are buying my short story books in print. I get emails from people who are surprised to buy it for $4 and they're like, "Wow, this is fucking good for $4." So maybe
exactly.
You surprise them with the low price. When somebody pays like full price for something, they usually feel gypped, no matter how good it is, you know.
It's all about motivation too, you know, like in the publishing industry. You know, everybody's got different motivations for putting out books, you know.
Sure.
At Cleftjaw Press, we're pretty much, we like to have a hands-on presence with, you know, all of our contributors. We like to let them be part of the process, whereas, you know, some other presses won't, you know, but. And then also we just want to make sure that the stuff gets out there. Like, we don't care if we got to give it away for free. Like, if we have to, we will, but,
yeah.
You know.
And that's the thing I like about the Kindle. It's just, like, one more way of making it, you know, accessible for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
So. Yeah, it totally is. So for everybody listening again on the air right now, Frankie Metro and Dustin Holland, and they're the curators of Cleftjaw Press, and you guys currently have a book coming out from William Seward Bonney. Frankie, you're putting out a collection of poems in the upcoming months, correct?
Yeah, actually, we've got a double-sided book with myself and my significant other, Miss Lindsay Thomas. One side will be poetry entitled The Numerous Hauntings of Archie P. Kane, which is Dustin Holland's pen name. Thanks for that, brother. I appreciate that.
Thank you.
Yeah. And then, like, the double side, the back side, will actually be a book of short stories put together by Miss Lindsay Thomas. If you guys have read any of the short stories that were in issue number one, if you've ever read Lindsay Thomas's short stories, period, you know, the shit is fucking hilarious. I got to be honest with you, like, I'm kind of nervous about sharing a book with her because I know, like, her side's totally going to be better than mine, so.
Yeah, Frankie, I think Lindsay's side is going to be better than yours. She's a force of nature, man. Lindsay Thomas is a force of nature. I saw her at a reading in Albuquerque where she went up on stage to read poems and basically decided in the middle of, you know, the beginning of her reading, she said, you know, I'm not really a poet. I'm just here to sell my paintings. And she started just selling these random paintings to people in the audience. It was fucking funny as hell.
She wouldn't even, like, to bring the paintings out. I had to bring those out, actually. She left them backstage. I had to bring them out for my set and be like, oh, look, here's her paintings. But, no, like, she is definitely a force. She totally killed it in Los Angeles. You guys should have been there.
She was
like,
great in Denver, too.
Oh, yeah. Oh, she was a freaking drunken mess in Denver. That was funny.
Funny as hell. And for Cleftjaw, speaking of Los Angeles, in the Los Angeles area, I guess it's still 5 hours away, Aurora Kill Poet. I heard some rumors that there might be a book from Aurora through Cleftjaw later on this year.
We're thinking somewhere around October or November for that book to drop, which will be a collection of short prose and poetry. And I just talked with another contributor the other day. I'm not counting yourself, Mr. Bud Smith, who will be releasing a short story collection through us later on, but also John Swain.
John's going to put that too. Wow.
Yeah. John Swain is on deck as well. 2013 is going to be a big year for Cleftjaw. We're going to be putting out a lot of people that we respect and a lot of people that we think deserve the exposure. 2014, all I got to say is Cleft Comics. That's all I got to say.
Wow,
oh, yeah.
That's great. Fucking, hey, man, it's really cool. You know, the thing is, I mean, anybody who's interested can really, you know, start up their own little press, but you really got to do it right. And I think you guys really are doing it right. The attention to detail and, like you mentioned, personally working with authors and making sure everybody's happy because, you know, the publishing landscape is, it's changed a lot, you know. Used to be, you know, people would, you'd send your manuscript out, and back in the day, man, you didn't even need an agent. You'd send it right to the publishing houses, and they took your novel, and they dig it or whatever, but it gets all torn apart, everything gets cut, and you're doing drastic rewrites. Like, it's a movie, the things you hear about movies, you know, where it's like, the whole artistic vision is just lost. It's like a totally different entity than how it started out because money's on the line. But with doing a smaller indie press, there's just so many more options for creativity and art to really take hold. And I dig that. I dig that a lot.
Exactly, man. You know, like, that's what we're all out here doing. You know, Willis was just talking about how, you know, he feels like how all artists and writers are connected and whatnot. I'm not sure if I believe in that completely, but, you know, I like the sentiment nonetheless.
Sure.
In fact, you know, we'll actually be, now that we're on this show, I did want to mention that myself and Dustin, and I'm hopefully, you know, you'll come on as well since you are part of Cleftjaw. We're going to be on Benjamin Pogue's show, I guess, coming up this Thursday. And,
Interview
about Cleftjaw as well, so, yeah.
Yeah, I gotta see what's going on. I gotta look into the time that falls. This is a fucking crazy week over here in Bud Smith land.
Oh, yeah.
Tomorrow we're going out. Yeah, fuck, we get married on Saturday. Friday night's our rehearsal dinner. And I'm lucky enough to have really great friends of mine getting together, of course. But Bootsy Spankins is going to play some music at my wedding. He's a really good friend of mine. He plays some really crazy, beautiful folk music. When I say folk music, please don't cringe. I'll play a song at the end of the show here for you to lead you out. But I'm actually looking forward to my rehearsal just because I get to hear him sing a couple songs, you know?
Nice.
Can't go wrong with that.
Congratulations again.
Hey, thanks a lot.
You deserve it, brother. And, you know, congratulations to Spout. And fuck yeah, man. Let's just everybody keep doing what the fuck we're doing, man. I love this shit. And Clefjaw, to the stars, to the fucking moon, all of it.
Yes, Clefjaw and Clefjaw Volume 2, speaking of which, Clefjaw is I would describe it as a full-color, cut-and-paste, handmade zine, which is then scanned digital and put up online as a digital magazine that you can look through on your computer as if you were looking at a handmade zine.
Also print.
Yes, you're also there's digital and there's the print version. Right now, the submissions for Volume 2, Issue 2, are they closed or are they still open?
Almost. Got
it open for like 6 more hours?
Yeah, 6 more hours.
6 more hours. So all you poets and short story writers out there, send something. Send something to clefjaw@gmail.com. And Clefjaw is with a K. K-L-E-F-T. KLEFTJAW@gmail.com. And I hope you send something, and I hope you check out that when it drops, because it's something different. It's a really cool spot on the dial. You guys just got a mention on FDR the other day, didn't you?
Yeah, we did actually, and you know, supposedly we got a little mention on NPR, and evidently New York Times might be a little interested in us as well. So
I don't know what's going on.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I don't know what the hell is going on anymore, man. I just like to draw a lot, and Dustin lets me do it. So, you know,
The drawing is good. That,
there you go.
Ayn Rand, Marquis de Sade, Nietzsche, and other. Like
Anton LaVey, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a pop art piece with those four characters coming up, and the Fantastic Four.
So hey, do you guys have anything you'd be interested in reading tonight? Because I can't believe I got all the way to the end of the show without reading anything. I actually had a few poems here I wanted to read.
Yeah. Oh, sure. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah,
I would be down, or I don't know about Dustin or whatnot.
Yeah, no, I'm happy with whatever.
Well, hey, Frankie, why don't you start us out? Why don't you please read us something?
Oh, you gotta put me on the spot. I gotta pull up my stuff. Can somebody else go first, real quick?
Dustin, can you go first?
I can try.
Well, give it a shot.
Shit, let me see. I'm just flipping through a notebook, but hopefully I will find something. Or
I'm leaving you, Dustin.
Thank you. That means a lot. Jesus, there's got to be something. All right. This one is called Intro to Dentistry. Kids in masks break each other's jaws for fun in gas station parking lots because the supermarket got boring and they like the way the fumes feel in their noses when they start to bleed. These things happen and there's no reason for any of it, but some people are beautiful.
Hell yeah.
That's really something else right there.
That makes dentistry sound a lot better than it actually is, I have to say. yeah. And I think that says something there. I'm not sure. Hell yeah. I love that shit. I love Dustin's poetry, to be honest with you. It's like, it's always fresh, and that was actually one of the people that got mentioned on NPR more than anybody was freaking Dustin and his book, you know, like Kids on Fire. So
it was just like in the comment section, though, right? I never actually saw it.
It was in the comments section, but I don't know. I don't know. It was your mom that pointed it out, I thought.
Huh. Yeah, yeah, she mentioned it.
Okay. Yeah. It was good stuff, man. I don't know. You get all this weird stuff that pops up every now and again, like, and you don't know where it comes from. I see,
mm-hmm.
like, you know, links pop up every now and again, and it's like,
sure.
oh, shit, I don't know where that came from. So I think I've stalled long enough. I'm going to...
yes.
Yeah, all right. I'm going to read... this is actually a poem from The Numerous Hauntings of Archie P. Kane, which will be out July, I think. Are we shooting for July? I think.
July.
Man, we can put it out whenever you want. May,
okay.
June, July, tomorrow.
Oh, yeah. Well, this one's called, Is an Explanation Really Even Necessary at This Point? Let me see. In the layered death of Archie P. Kane's legacy are the unused prototypes of method robot actors, like the Scottish rogue with a crude country western accent, the oblivious Romanian psychic who doubles as a caretaker for retired clergy and nuns of the Catholic faith, the careless Armenian painter whose arms were lost in the war, and the Nova Scotian whaler lost at sea in the Bermuda Triangle. When the Temple of Disenfranchised Hollywood Novices closes its doors, the only known light of the Acting Guild's mainframe was a toenail belonging to Archie P. Kane's long-expired protege. In place of scripture was the butchering of dichotomy and language. In place of awakening was the nursing false assurance of right and square. In place of banners and grandiose silhouettes were bald men and faulty androids making art with anything but their hands. In place of open-minded exploration were the murky depths of limbo, insurrection, and unsanctioned begrudgery. Researchers of tomorrow will mistake this plot for something much easier to explain, like Paleolithic remains or crude oil long speculated all but depleted. The very fabric of the desperate universe will continue to weigh in disproportion to the actors, and the actors will stay asleep, and the robots will stay blueprints, and you and I will keep chasing this gilded, mistaken method. We'll keep building our houses on the ruins of one Archie P. Kane and those who come to follow in his giant, crude footsteps. That's it.
Wow, that's really sum up. I can picture that accompanied with a cartoon of evil robots marching.
Mm-hmm. Every day is a cartoon with evil robots, sir. You just gotta walk over top of them.
There you go, man. So I want to thank you guys for coming on the show. The show's going to come to an end right now. What I'm going to do is, I've been stalling long enough. I read a poem today that really, really, really knocked my socks off. It's a submission for Uno Kudo from Heather Dorn. She's this chick from upstate New York who I know of but don't really know. Anyway, I wanted to read her poem to close the show. And this one's called Cicadas 2013. So this is Cicadas 2013 by Heather Dorn. Brood 2 is coming, the 17-year Cicadas. Last time they visited was the summer we got married. And like something in Aesop's Fables, we spent all our laundry money on stuffed crust pizzas, and I had to wash my tights in the sink come winter. I don't remember if you washed anything, but I think that's the point. In year one, there were the white cats, placed on my chest while I was sleeping. Beyond the princess dream to wake up, the kittens crawling all over me. But also my purse thrown and the toaster oven's apology. 10 years in use, rest in peace, the balance of checkbooks we couldn't keep. Year two, we bought our first house, put up a Christmas tree. For a gift, I got a bunch of glass shelves to put things on so people could look at them. By year three, I had a birthday party to get some things to fill a shelf, but people were always asking me about a baby now. When are you going to have a baby? They asked it like it was milk chocolate. Go get it at the grocery. Why didn't I have this already? Why was I against getting it? Just do it. But my body failed me. I was waiting to burst from the dirt and do my biological duty. My primary doctor gave me a referral. The cicada stayed underground all those years, just to surface and mate and die. For cicadas, youth is long, but once an adult, you gotta molt and lay eggs and croak. The middle-aged cicadas see her future, and she screams. But the sound is drowned out by the mating call. And after a while, everyone is tired of the drama, and they go and they get to work. After I didn't get pregnant, we went to a specialist. He hung orange from my ovaries as ovulation drugs. I cried for hit-and-run animals, and my uterus ached like it got caught in the car door. After a year and 9 months, we had our first girl. I got more things to put on the shelves. After years 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, we got another girl and a boy. We got a car payment. We got a swing set. We threw away our diaper genie, and every wall in our home was crayon. The rocking chair had teeth marks all over the arms. All payments started coming out of our accounts automatically. Actually, living life costs an extra $50 a month. We can't afford it. Heart disease. It's hard to remember when I saw you or my phone number. Heart failure. Can do that to memory. The doctor tells me in the hospital, you can ask if we can have sex, and I hope you don't mean at the hospital, and you don't. I'm wishing I could have a glass of red, and I'm not to drink anymore. My mother brings you alcohol to the hospital as a birthday present. Scotch, of course. Johnny Walker Black. I still remember wondering if anyone would notice if I snagged a swig. Now I don't need it. I'm on the right medications. I have a few coping plans. I'm trying to teach them to our children. 10 deep breaths before the state test. I know the cicadas are going to sing, but I don't know their language and if it matches ours. I don't know if you remember the old songs we sang, or if gum in my arm hair would seem funny anymore. I don't know if I could flap my wings like I used to, or if after molting many times, I'm tired of the whole ballroom dance. Spring means revival from the ground, and I feel like singing loudly with the cicadas, men, and lying heavy on wet leaves. I feel like standing in the rain, firmly, and sprouting towards the sun like a blade of grass that curved to love itself in a hug. And maybe if I do these things, I will feel new again, like a phoenix or a snake who just shed her scales while nobody watches. That was Cicadas 2013 by Heather Dorn. And that's going to close out the show. Thank you all for listening. Thanks to all the guests who called in today. We talked to so many informative Americans, Jesse Bradley, Gus Sanchez, Willis Gordon, and of course, Frankie Metro and Dustin Holland, who, wow, they've always got a lot of shit to say, and I'm always glad that they bothered to call in and say it. So thanks for listening, and there's not going to be a show next Tuesday, but we'll be back the following Tuesday. If you want to come on and promote anything, give me a ring and let me know what it is. Thanks.